helping to make our community a better place. This is the WOKV Ask the Experts Weekend, discussing things that matter most to you. Have a question? Have it answered by our local experts. Now, the Home and Garden Show with Wally Conway and Larry O'Neill on News 104.5 WOKV.
Good morning. Welcome to the Home and Garden Show. It is 6:08 on a beautiful Saturday morning in Jacksonville, Florida, the intergalactic headquarters of the Home and Garden Show. To our friends, to our fans, to our families, welcome back to the show. We have missed you. To those of you new to the show, here's who we are and what we do. Each and every Saturday from 6 until 8 a.m. right here on News 104.5 WOKV. I'm joined by the big guy.
That's me.
Sasquatch the Yeti. 6'6", 232 pounds of twisted steel and sex appeal. Mr. Larry O'Neill. You know Larry from his duties on TV as the host of Larry's Garden. You've seen him about town landscaping. He's the tall, tall man in the small straw hat. Me, Wally Conway, Mr. Home Inspection, certified master inspector from Home Pro Inspections. You've seen me on Home and Garden TV, and possibly about town if you spend time in attics and crawl spaces. Larry's job here on the show is to be sure your grass is green, your fruit is sweet, and your flowers forever in bloom. Me, Wally Conway, Mr. Home Inspection, my job is to be sure your home is safe, secure, efficient, and forever a source of pleasure and pride. From time to time, Larry gets a house idea, I get a garden idea, and we mix it up in the middle. But what makes this show fun for us is you. Your thoughts, your calls, your commentary. Here comes that phone number, good all over
all right. The
world and also the International Space Station. 855-765-1045. One more time for our folks who are watching the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and LinkedIn. 855-765-1045. Sasquatch, large man.
Yeah, what's going on?
I'm having a beautiful day, a beautiful morning. I've got cracks on my mind.
Cracks, okay.
Cracks, not crack houses, rather houses that have cracks.
Yeah, I've seen some amazing, stucco.
Stucco, just cracks everywhere.
I've seen it just come off, when they got a crack and the water had leaked in there over a period of time. It's just like,
It can do that.
Right off.
Everything that goes wrong in a home will somehow be due to the mismanagement of moisture. There's very few things that bring fear into the homeowner, especially a new homeowner, than cracks. I see a crack. Oh, my God, there's a crack. There's a crack. There's a crack. And the question becomes, does this crack have any structural consequence? Will this crack result in my home ending up in China or some other bad thing? And the answer to that in at least 99% of the cases is no. So the question becomes, when you see a crack, how do you make an initial determination? Should I be concerned? I use a rule of the thumb for cracks. Would you like to hear it?
Yes.
This is specifically for concrete slabs. The rule of the thumb for a concrete slab.
Credit card slab.
If you can stick your thumb in it.
Okay.
It's most likely a structural problem.
A structural, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Then to estimate the cost of repair of the crack, you break credit cards out.
Right.
And you stick credit cards in the crack.
Right.
And then you add up the total credit limit of each credit card, and that's usually what it costs. It's very true. So a little tiny crack you can't put your thumb in, it's not really of a structural consequence.
A thumb.
But if you said a thumb,
right,
it's unlikely it's a big deal if your thumb doesn't fit.
Right.
Now, if you said I want it to go away.
A hairline crack.
Or a hairline you can't get a credit card in. What's that mean?
That's zero, cost you nothing.
Cost you nothing. Don't even worry about it.
Don't worry about it.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. If your credit card fits in there sideways, it's time to move.
Right.
That's a big deal.
Put a carpet over there and move.
No, you don't hide things. There's case law. That brings up an interesting point.
Yeah.
I guess people get frustrated and upset when the seller doesn't tell them about a known defect.
Okay.
And they say, that's horrible. That's against the law.
Right.
Well, they're correct. It's horrible.
Right.
But it's not against any statute.
Okay.
In case law, Johnson versus Davis. Yep. That case set the precedent that sellers have a duty to disclose known material defects.
Well, no material.
But it isn't actually a statute.
Material.
Yeah, meaning it would impact performance or valuation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So anyway, things are never perfect.
Right, exactly.
You want to hear a sentence that gets me in trouble all the time? I share this a lot in agent education.
Sure.
You ready? You'll like this.
Sure.
Houses are like spouses.
Okay.
There are no perfect choices.
Right.
And the consequence of poor choice is pain, suffering, and economic loss.
Oh, okay.
Houses are like spouses.
Okay.
So relax, enjoy
like
your house.
That. I like that.
Relax, enjoy your spouse.
Okay.
Because there's pain, suffering, and economic loss.
Everywhere you go, you know.
Everywhere you go. Right. What's happening in the... you know what? Let's do this.
Yeah.
Let's check in with Rob.
Okay.
We're going to talk about paint for a moment.
Paint.
Rob, welcome to the Home and Garden Show.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for having me. Not the most experienced painter in the world, but a lot of interior stuff. I'm helping my mom out up here on your coast. She's got an oxidized metal garage door that I've already cleaned and got the rust off. Now my dilemma is oil base, latex.
It's an aluminum door?
Yes, sir.
Hmm. Well, oil base is always better. You know, just long lasting, but it's a little more difficult to put on, you know.
You know, give
primer.
It.
You got to have primer.
I tell you what,
the
I
best
would do.
Primer is always the best thing.
Yeah, I just get my
got that set up.
Pardon me?
Yeah, I'm doing the primer, and then on top of that, I'm just curious if I should, if there's a big deal or.
Well, you got to be sure that the primer is matched to the top coats.
Right. Yeah. The only thing I think on painting is because I've done and painted a lot of houses in my life. I always enjoyed painting my own house, but you can paint latex over oil base, but you can't paint oil base over latex.
Based on what he's doing, he's right. Going over top of a baked on enamel finish.
Baked on enamel. Okay, you got an oil base then. Definitely. So oil base, just going to oil base. It lasts longer.
It
does.
Sounds great. Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate it.
Have a beautiful day.
A little
love the show.
For cleanup, and it's more expensive.
It's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another thing, you can buy another aluminum door for $500, $700.
I got a redwood door.
I love redwood doors.
Yeah.
What do you protect it with? What kind?
Paint. Just I got the wood two coats of primer.
Oh, you painted it. It's not clear.
No, I painted it.
What a shame.
Yeah,
clear
but
red wood
it would
doors.
Never rot. You know how those wooden doors? Those the years ago when they had wooden doors where the water would get down on the lower panels and rot out. It never rots.
No.
It's been up for 30 years.
It's such a shame not to have it clear.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's check in with Ray. Ray, welcome to the Home and Garden Show.
Hey, good morning. So I've been around concrete most of my life, man, about 18 years. I've been on every side of from finishing around the concrete.
You've been under concrete? You said you've been on every side of concrete. What's it like under the concrete?
I've been on it from the finishing side.
Hey, when you were under the concrete, Ray, did you see Jimmy Hoffa?
No, I didn't see Jimmy down there. I've seen a lot of slabs cracking over the years between pumping concrete, being on the ready-mix side of the delivery, and you're absolutely right about if it's a foam, you know, spacing in there, that's a big structural issue. A lot of things that people don't understand is when concrete dries, when it hydrates, concrete shrinks. Concrete's going to crack. A real rule of thumb to help some of these people out that are, you know, building a new house, if they want to slow the cracking down, my best suggestion is after they pour the slab, if they'll run soaker hoses across it and then lay a four-line stack, you're wet-setting the concrete, and it makes it where it doesn't hydrate as fast on the outside that it does on the inside, and it'll slow down the cracking process. Plus, you'll have a much higher strength quality as far as the PSI break. Another thing is if you're involved in, you know, the construction of your house, make sure the finishers don't pour it too wet. That's a big issue of why a lot of these slabs crack.
Yeah.
You know, they go out here and they pour on 7-8 inch slump. You know, I wouldn't suggest over a 6, but I mean, cracking's going to come. Cracking comes because concrete, when it dries, it shrinks.
See, now the guys that finish it keep telling me it's the delivery guy who's bringing it too wet because it's easier to clean the truck. They bail it on you, right?
No, sir. As soon as you get on a job site, it's, hey, man, spin it up to a 7. Spin it up to an 8. And that comes from me running the boom plus me being on the delivery side. I deal with a lot of contractors now here in Jacksonville where they're not wanting nothing over a 6-inch slump on the job because they're tired of replacing they're tired of replacing slabs. You know, it's almost $10,000 to $12,000 to pull a slab back out and re-put another one back out.
It's horribly expensive.
Yeah.
And you goof up everything underneath of it. It's a pain. Well, I appreciate you, Ray, and don't slump on us, okay?
Yes, sir.
A beautiful day.
Good ideas.
Yeah. You know, concrete, there's people like with PhDs in concrete.
Right, Concrete is a unique substance.
It's the most ubiquitous substance in the world.
Yeah. You know, the Roman concrete, they haven't really figured out how they made it. It's more durable than what we're doing now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they're still working on that. So, but
one of the big deals they've been working on now is the ability to use salt water in concrete.
Right.
And the limiter for decades, frankly, has been the steel rebar. You put the salt water in the concrete,
rust. And
it really attacks, rust, and attacks the rebar much quicker.
Right.
Now they're looking at different fibers they
can
use.
You know, the miracle of concrete and rebar is they expand at the same rate. That otherwise, we wouldn't be able to make structure.
They'd spall.
Right.
And that's the reason when the rebar rusts, it expands faster than the rate of contraction of the concrete. Right. Bam. Off it goes.
Problems.
Got that mess.
I was reading about how different ways they've solved it by priming it and galvanizing it. And there's a few other things.
The ultimate answer is to use plastics and various polymers.
Right.
But you don't have that particular issue.
I'm sure we're boring everybody to death with concrete science.
No way, man.
But I know if you pour the concrete more on the wet side, you're going to have erosion. What it means is that, you know, you'll see the aggregate. That water will affect will dissolve the fines on the top, you know, of a concrete, you know, where you when you see the concrete, you're seeing what's floating on the top, the concrete. But when it's really poured with a lot of water, it's going to erode that surface, and you're going to see the aggregate fairly quickly. I mean, within a couple of years.
Though it will look smoother when first poured, and everybody's happy. It's almost like it's polished.
Right.
So that's gorgeous. And then,
the water will dissolve that really quickly.
Yep. Yeah. It's 6:20 here at News 104.5 on Home and Garden Show. Brief break, jumping right back on the phones to your calls. We absolutely love hearing from you. It's music in my ears. That number is 855-765-1045. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show, 6:26 on a beautiful Saturday morning, enjoying the day. I'm Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections. Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden is here with us also, taking your calls at 855-765-1045. Let's check in with Jack and see if we can help him with his weed. Weed? Weed. Jack,
weed,
what's up with your weed?
What kind of weed is that?
What kind of weed have you got, Jack?
Little bit of everything. Not too bad. It's a newly established St. Augustine yard, probably about a year old, in a newer subdivision in Middleburg.
Okay.
And I was negligent in putting out my weed and feed, I believe. I usually use Bonus S, and I'm wondering if it's too late, too cool to get any benefits from the Bonus S at this time.
Well, Bonus S, you know, that's got a lot of, you know, nitrogen in it right now. So I would say I would go with some winterizing fertilizer, or if you wanted to go organic. In fact, we've been talking about organic lately. And what the best thing I find, if you want to make sure your lawn looks really good in the winter, and the strongest recovery from my experience looking at thousands and thousands of lawns, is that if you could put out a couple applications of mill organite, and then maybe some alfalfa pellets. Alfalfa pellets, because are an organic fertilizer, really.
How about for the weed suppression?
For weed suppression?
This time of year.
You could use Pre-M, you know, for winter weeds. If you don't have any winter weed problems, then you're not going to have any, you know, issues. If you during last winter, if you didn't notice any weeds out there, then you're probably good. But if you notice a lot of weeds in the winter, that means you have winter weeds, you know, or the cool season weeds, and then you can put out some pre-emergent for that.
Even now, pre-emergent.
Okay. Even now,
okay.
Even now, pre-emergent. But, you know, you're a little bit out of the mist, the thing, but it still has, it's going to have some effect, you know. But best thing, I think, for fertilizer is going to be, you know, a couple applications of mill organite and application of alfalfa pellets. Alfalfa pellets are an interesting plant because the roots can go up to 15 feet down into the soil, and they can draw up all those trace elements that lawns like. It's high in potassium. potassium and phosphorus. Also, it's going to enrich the soil. The way the lawn looks, you know, what you do in the winter is going to affect the spring and the summer. You know, building the soil is the best thing that you want to do during the winter. You know, mill organite, alfalfa pellets, if you can stand it, maybe a little bit of fish emulsion. You know, these things are going to ensure that your lawn stays green. I mean, I've had, when we've done this to lawns, that every other lawn in the neighborhood's brown, that lawn is still green during the winter. So it's really, it makes it a little bit of humic acid, too, is another thing you can put on it. But you're going to make the soil so much more powerful in the springtime. You can use a lot less fertilizer. You know, more efficient soil is going to be, means a more efficient lawn, a way that's taking up the nitrogen, and your less nitrogen is going to be necessary for
stronger the lawn, weaker the weed.
Exactly. So that's what I do. I put a couple applications of mill organite, maybe a bag of alfalfa pellets, because it has all the trace elements that you want to add to the soil during the off season, and it's getting digested into the soil and immobilized. People that say, well, you know, putting down a little bit of nitrogen now, it could be a harmful effect. But, well, actually, no, it gets immobilized. When what happens is the bacteria and the fungus ingest the nitrogen, and they hold it in place. And then when they die, they pass it to the plants. All right?
Good luck with it, Jack. It's 6:30 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. We've got Fox News traffic and weather and more of the Home and Garden Show featuring you at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show. It is 6:35. Grateful that you're with us. Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden is here. I'm Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections. During the week, or even today, excuse me, if you suddenly decide, my gracious, I'd really like some help with that landscape, whether it's the design element or the product element, the installation, or the maintenance, consider this, larrysgarden.com. You can go there, you can check out the blog, the video, frequently asked questions, and you may be able to lift just the idea that you're looking for right from the site. If that doesn't do it for you, then all you need to do is call Larry directly. That's an easy thing to do. Here is this number for Larry's Garden, 346-1970. If you're down in Daytona Palm Coast or up in Brunswick or elsewhere outside of Jacksonville, you'll need the area code 904-346-1970. There'll be 500 or 600 people writing contracts on homes this weekend in the immediate Jacksonville area, as well as down onto those same locations. But anyway, you're going to need a home inspection. Consider this. GoHomePro.com. Lots of things there to help you through the process, including scheduling your home inspection, your home warranty, wind mitigation, anything you need that relates to due diligence for that home. We can solve that. Also includes any environmental sampling you may need, whether it's mold or water, sewer scoping. Got all the things there to take good care of you. That's GoHomePro.com. The phone number, 268-8211. Outside of Jacksonville, 904-268-8211. We've got staff standing by as we speak to take that call directly to get your home inspection scheduled. That makes me think, too, about this wind mitigation.
Yes, wind mitigation.
This is a great time of year to put a roof on. It's cool enough.
Yes.
That the guys doing the work are not up there at risk of
the concentration
death from the
goes
heat.
Up.
Yeah, it's so just easier to work in this environment, same for the landscapers.
Right, exactly.
People call often into the office or here in the studio also and say, well, my roofer, I talked to him about Peel and Stick, which is a brand name, meaning rather than tar paper, it's an underlayment that sticks right to the sheathing. They said, you know, should I do this, yes or no? Sometimes the roofer says no because there's a little bit of extra expense, and sometimes the roofer says no because if they have to change out plywood in the future, it's a little bit more of a pain in the neck. Here is the argument in favor of yes. If your shingles blow off of your roof during a heavy wind or heavy rain, it's waterproof. It's a really good protection. Also, your insurance company will typically discount your homeowner's insurance because you've got that extra level of protection. And how the insurer knows to give you that is the document. It's actually a state form. It's called a wind mitigation inspection form.
Mm-hmm.
And what it's doing, it's documenting that layment and other features of your roofing system to assure you of maximizing the discount. There are some roofing companies that always do that. It's called a secondary water membrane, peel and stick paint. Some always do it. My friends at Fidus always do it. Many of the other GAF Master Elite dealers do it all the time. But I've had Fidus do it at mine when they did my house, you know, prior to sale there. You want to do that. Most of the roofers who use that all the time, the secondary water membrane, also always provide you with a wind mitigation document to get it done.
Right.
So if your roofer is telling you no, I'd switch roofers, quite frankly. And that wind mitigation, you got to be sure you do that. You will get the benefit of the physical benefit of the secondary water membrane without the document. The document mm-hmm. doesn't do anything. However, you won't get the insurance discount. So depending on where you live, depending on the age of the home, that insurance discount could potentially pay for your roof over the life of the roof. Not always, yeah. but sometimes.
Or close to it. I mean, half of it.
Every little bit helps. You know, if you knock 50 or 100 bucks off your roof,
yeah.
your roof, off your insurance yeah. each year, that adds up over time.
Yeah.
Ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching.
Yeah.
So we can help you with that also.
Right.
What do you think about this weather when it, you know, we dropped down to the 40s. Now it's supposed to be in the 80s. What is that?
You need to continue treating your lawn for brown patch. You know, that's what it's going to be, the disease that goes.
Preemptively or looking to see if it's there?
It's going to be there. I mean, it's.
What do I use?
Pretty common this time of the year.
So if I see no symptom of brown patch.
Any low-cost lawn fertilizer.
Oh, so the fertilizer is the key.
Fungicide.
Yeah. There you go.
It's very easy to rectify the situation. It's not difficult. And then once you put it down, water it in, it's done. You know, and it's good for probably about 16. You're probably not going to have the problem the rest of the year. Rest of the cool season. But, you know, it's cooled down. What can you do? Is you've been neglecting during the hot season. You know, you can go. I'd pull out my tools, my shovels, and you can pull out your saws and get them sharpened. You know, that's a pretty easy thing to do. You know, when you have sharp pruning knives and all that other stuff, it makes the job tasks much easier. Oil up your, chainsaw, look at your chainsaw, clean it up. Also, storing tools in our humid climate is, you know, you can put a brand new pruning saw in your garage, and if it's not air conditioned, it could
just from the humidity.
Just from the humidity, you know, being from California.
No, WD-40 on there.
WD-40 is a great idea. And then, or a bucket of sand with a motor oil in it and just stick it in there. Just put the tool directly in there, and it keeps it good looking for the route to the whole
thing. That's an old school remedy.
That's old school remedy, right? Exactly. And it works very well. Then the hoses. I hate hoses. You know why I hate hoses? They're always leaking all over you. But the thing you can do.
A landscaper who hates hoses. That's interesting.
I tell you,
what other suggestion do you have for the distribution of water?
But they're one of those necessary evils.
Okay.
But you can get rid of the problem oftentimes by changing the gasket. No one ever thinks about changing the gasket on the hose.
Because, I do.
Yeah, well, that's because
I've got a whole stack of them.
You got a whole bunch of lawn hoses?
Well, no, here's a funny thing.
You got to have a lawn hose to change the gasket.
I only have, I have two hoses left, but they're both out on the dock for the boat.
Oh, okay.
But I have the gaskets.
Yeah, they're cheap.
They're really cheap, and I have about 10 of them in a bread tie.
Right, right.
Which is a lifetime supply
lifetime
for a typical homeowner.
So, but no one, you're just one of the rare guys that thinks about changing the gasket.
Well, thank you.
But, you know, it's nothing. Go to Home Depot, Lowe's, get yourself a couple of dollars of gasket, change those out. And also, if the hose is starting to deteriorate around the coupling, just cut the coupling off. You can get a new coupling and restore the hose back to new.
I've done that, too.
What is the best hose? I always think, you know, I try to discover what are the best hoses. The hoses, you know, I got like a mountain of old hoses. The best hose, even though it's a little more hot, heavier is a 100% rubber.
I love it.
100% rubber. They stay flexible. They're not affected by the UV light as much as the other things are, the artificial, you know, polyvinyl.
A great hose is a wonderful gift.
Right, right. And it's a good gardening gift. And you can have a rubber hose for maybe 10 years and it's still going to still be flexible.
Yep. You know, they're heavier.
100%.
They're heavier.
They're heavier. 100, but 100% rubber, man, those things are incredible.
You know how I judge a lot of tools and things of that sort? As I look back to my Navy pilot days, mm-hmm. said, what did they use on the flight deck?
Yeah.
Because that is the harshest environment freaking planet.
Yeah.
And they had to wash the planes, big rubber hoses.
Solid rubber, yeah.
Solid rubber.
They were heavy, not that
I had to carry them.
They're heavy, yeah, but I mean, they last forever.
And little giant ladders.
And they don't crack. They don't get, they're just much a better product. Then the other thing you could do is,
they perform better in the cold too.
Yeah.
They don't get so hard.
They don't get hard. You can unreel them. There's any temperature, a rubber hose will be flexible. That's a good point about the cold weather. But, beds, your flower beds, you can get those cut out. You can take, a lot of times if you're in the edging or you're hiring people to edge, you know, they've let it encroach. You can cut that area out again during the season. And then you can take that sod, those pieces of sod, and plug your weak areas. So that's an idea. Mulching is always good. You know, if you want the landscape to look nice and crisp during the winter, mulching, putting down a layer of cardboard first. Putting that over.
Weed suppression.
Right. And if you want to accelerate the decomposition of the existing mulch, put a little bit of mill organite over the top of that, put the cardboard down, and put the mulch right on top, and you should be in great shape. And then even better is if you could put some pre-emergent on top of the cardboard.
How about under the cardboard to suppress any seed down
there? You got the cardboard down.
That'll do it.
And you've had mulch down for a while. No, if on a new landscaping, I put down pre-emergent. But if I don't have, if the landscape has not been existing there very long, then, or it's not, the reason I put down pre-emergent because it's probably going to be a lot of weeds. But if you've been mulching and keeping the weeds in control.
I am so grateful not to have a lawn.
Oh, really? Yes.
I haven't had a lawn in almost 20 years.
Really?
Yeah. And now in the condo, I got nothing.
No.
Although I am really going all in on the potted plants and the hanging plants inside the house and on the balcony.
Bromeliads. Bromeliads have a beautiful color. I have a bromeliad on my front porch that is around, probably around 2.5 feet tall. It's one of the largest bromeliads. Portadora. Yeah. It's a silvery bromeliad. I'm waiting for the flower.
Inside, I'm concentrating almost exclusively on the NASA plant list.
NASA plant list.
To cleanse the inside air.
You have macrame wall hangings, too?
No.
Remember those?
Yes. No, I'm not going to do that. No, lots of plants. We've made that commitment and decision to really bring the greenery
in.
Because what's cool is
it has a great psychological effect. It's been proven scientifically.
So the greenery, we haven't got it complete yet, will go through the house, onto the balcony, and then into the trees. So it's a continual visual.
You need to buy my Portadora bromeliad.
Is it expensive?
Yes. There he went cold.
Make a nice housewarming gift.
He turned white.
I did. You know what I am going to do also?
Yeah.
I'm growing. I hadn't started yet, but I'm going to grow a green wall on one side of my balcony.
That you can do that. You know, it's a very easy. You don't even have to do a lot of watering. Is succulents. Succulents can be on a green wall, and they're very. You get a low amount of water.
Yeah,
so that's a good thing.
I'm undecided what to use as the climbing portion, I guess you'd say. So I thought about lattice, but I don't really want lattice. I thought about not chain link fence, but something in a metal fence.
You ever seen those shelves on on these wire shelving material? And it's the shelves are double wide.
They're
made out of wire and they have a rubber coating on them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you see some of the shelves are double wide. They have one layer for to strengthen them.
Yeah.
You could just take one of those off, stuff it with sphagnum moss,
That's
mix it with sphagnum moss and mix it with maybe a little bit of potting soil and then stick it in there. And that's good enough right there. And then just say, open up the little, open up a little spot where you take your potting soil. It's going to be in the container. Open it up, slam that plant in there, and you're in business.
One of my things I don't want to do.
What's that?
Is choose a climbing surface. Mm-hmm. For the planting, and all of a sudden I notice in 2 years or 3 years or 5 years, it's either rotted or rusted. I want something.
Well, that's why I said the wire, it's coated with the white plastic.
Rubbery plastic stuff.
But it's going to have a color. You have to get black, you know. But that's a cheap alternative.
That has my attention.
You know, okay, cheap alternative. Okay, I like that.
I also thought about stringing wire.
Stringing wire?
Yeah, I could get stainless wire. And zigzag it or?
No. You need something more to hold it together.
More substantial.
More substantial, yeah.
Your point, though, if I used a metal lath or.
Or, yeah.
I could also hang some pots on there,
right.
too.
You could also make a frame out of pressure treated wood and get some larger livestock wire. And cut that in. A lot of that is coated in green.
Yeah, and, now we're good.
And then you stretch it out and you nail it down. Then you put sphagnum moss. Another thing you want to think about.
That in stainless also.
Yeah, you can kind of stainless. Another thing you want to think
build
about
it is frame.
You would like to get the hydration gel. It's gel. It's made out of cornstarch and it holds water.
Uh-huh.
You know, but I mean, that's been another thing. You want to wet it first and then mix it with the sphagnum and then. So once you water it, it holds that water in that gel, and the roots go into there, and you can extend your in between watering.
Hmm.
Okay.
Watering is part of the fun.
Right. Well, yeah, it is. It is part of the fun watering and examining the plants and looking at them.
Talk to them. How you doing?
To them. Yeah. Bromeliads orchids. You could have an orchid wall. Orchid wall.
That's a super cool idea.
Orchid wall.
Could they stay outside all year?
Yes.
That's cool. Yeah. It's 6:50 here at News 104.5 on a Home and Garden Show. I just can't decide what I'm going to do out there. I'd love to hear from you. Check in with us, please. Here is that number, 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. 6:56 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden is here. I'm Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections. Joining today, taking your calls at 855-765-1045. So back to the bromeliad idea.
Yeah.
I can leave the bromeliad in a pot, mm-hmm. out on the patio all year long. Or balcony, whatever.
Yeah, because it's all the frost. Even some of them are skin cell type.
What about I'm not in any direct sun or very limited direct sun
at
all? Really? I'm going to write this down. Bromeliad. I'd ask you how to spell bromeliad, but I figured there's no chance of that working.
Nerogela is the best ones with the most colorful one. Nerogela.
You said they're expensive?
Oh, yeah. And one of those things that you hate.
Put a number on expensive. This is a $20 item,
$100.
Oh, that's not that bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, well, you if you need 50 of them.
I don't.
Okay. Well, you need 20.
I don't.
Okay. Well, then you're in good shape.
Two or three,
that's fine.
Just as an accent.
You're going to be good. You know, another great container if you live on a patio and...
I don't live on the patio.
Well, I mean, if you have a house with a patio and you don't have a yard, and we're talking about orchids, you know, the spike orchid is a great orchid for outside. It needs a little cold to do well, and also it has nice grassy foliage, and then it blooms, you know, summertime. And it has really beautiful flowers. I mean, I've known... Lots of people have had containers of spike orchids. I used to have spike orchids, probably around 50 or 60 of them.
All things in excess. That's your role, man.
Yeah. Everything.
If one's good, 50 must be better.
Exactly. And it was better for a while.
And it was gone. Got to take us a brief break. It is 6:59 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. We've got Fox News traffic, weather, then jumping right back to your calls, which is the highlight of our day at 855-765-1045. We'll be right back.
Hello.
helping to make our community a better place. This is the WOKV Ask the Experts Weekend, discussing things that matter most to you. Have a question? Have it answered by our local experts. Now, the Home and Garden Show with Wally Conway and Larry O'Neill on News 104.5 WOKV.
Good morning. It is 7:07 on a beautiful Saturday morning in Jacksonville, Florida. For those of you just joining us, you're listening to the Home and Garden Show. The Home and Garden Show is heard every single Saturday right here on News 104.5 WOKV from 6 until 8 a.m. The Home and Garden Show features Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden, who brings us 20-plus years toiling in the soil so that he can provide insight and answers to your questions. Me, Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections, 20-plus years. It's actually over 25. Are you over 25 years now playing in the dirt?
I'm around there. Somewhere.
Okay, we'll go with that. We'll change it to 25
I'll
years.
I'll calculate for us.
25 years crawling in attics and crawl spaces to bring you thoughts and ideas and answer your questions on all things that are house-related. If you'd like to check in with us, that is our favorite part of the show. The phone number, no matter where you are on the world and no matter how you're viewing or listening to the show. It could be on Facebook, could be on YouTube, WOKV.com, the Facebook app. There's a zillion ways to enjoy the show, both the visuals of our smiling faces every Saturday morning or just the audio. Anyway, the phone number is this number, 855-765-1045. And as always, if you're calling from the International Space Station,
yep,
there will be no waiting. You'll get head of the line privileges. It's
absolutely
a good thing. You know, this 18-month home warranty thing from Residential Warranty Services, we've been working with them about
6 more months than a normal warranty for no additional charge.
Correct. It's actually less than about half the warranties available.
Oh, my gosh.
So I get real estate agents ask me all the time, well, I've never heard of this. How could it be that there's like 6 national warranty companies and only one is 18 months and everything else is 12? And it's very, very simple. It's understanding how the process works. So here's what a consumer is asking of a warranty company. For a fixed fee, write a warranty on a home you've never seen, regardless of its age or condition. I go, that's the fundamental question that's being asked. So then you sit and say, how in the world can a regular old warranty company, the common warranty companies, how could they possibly, for a $400 or $500 fee, how could they possibly warrant the future performance of a home they've never seen, regardless of its age or condition or even how expensive it is? And the answer is by exceptions and exclusions. So imagine you and I go in and we start our own warranty company, which we're not going to. Mm-hmm. But imagine we did.
Yeah.
And we said, okay, how are we going to do this profitably? Exemptions and exclusions. And then you say, well, what things should we exempt and exclude? They exempt and exclude two categories of things. Things that are expensive.
Right.
And things that frequently break. So and pre-existing conditions. So here's what Residential Warranty Services has done. They've partnered with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of home inspection companies around the country and said, you know what? If you inspect it and it's functioning, it's covered. Mm-hmm. It's just like that. No pre-existing conditions, no rigmarole. If it fits, it ships, just like the post office says. So that's what gets you that extra 18 months. And it's also, it's also what lets it include underground sewer pipes and all these other things that aren't covered. You know, one of the things that regular warranty companies, cheap warranty companies don't cover?
You mean the sewer pipe from your house
to the street? Covered. Yeah,
covered.
And the water lines also. Ice makers. The majority of warranty companies don't cover ice makers or they charge you extra. They don't cover garage door springs. They don't cover. It's basically a waste of money. So, Residential Warranty Services does that. For my real estate agent friends who'd like to have that conversation.
You know, I've had 2 garage door springs break.
Well, it's a darn shame you didn't have Residential Warranty Service because it would have been covered.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It's funny because they cover the garage door opener, and usually what happens is there's a spring failure, and that overloads the opener.
The spring is the weak point.
Exactly, and that's what trashes the opener. So anyway, all the detail on that, you can get at the website GoHomePro.com, or you can go direct to the warranty company, FloridaHomeWarranty.net, for our Florida friends. It works for Georgia, too. Let's go down to Middleburg, check in with Tim, see what we can help him out with his navel orange. Welcome, Tim.
Good morning, gentlemen. Got a question.
What is that question?
How can I make oranges taste like oranges?
Oh, it's a sour?
No, they're just bland. There's no flavor. Like last year, we had a ton of oranges on our navel tree. Mm-hmm. They were juicy and they were full of flavor. This year, ton of oranges. They're juicy, juicier than ever, but there's no flavor.
What happens a lot of times is what happens when the, let's say if I'm a professional, you know, grower of oranges and we have a lot of rainfall, and what's going to be the end result of that is going to change the sugar content of the orange.
Uh-huh.
So when you're getting ready to harvest your oranges, you know, it's best to turn off the irrigation. Okay, don't get them any water. Cause them stress. A little bit of stress, just like even people who grow greens, you know, turnip greens and all these other types of greens. A little bit of cold snap on them, a little bit of stress, cause them to sweeten up. Same thing with the oranges or a lot of other fruit, is that reduce the irrigation. And if we have a little bit of cold, not a lot of cold, but a little bit of cold, that will sweeten them up. So if that prevents that from happening. Overwatering, you know, you want to have water when they're forming up and they're, growing. But when it comes to the time when you're going to pick them, you want to reduce the amount of water. I ate
last month.
Okay.
You know, I ate a blood orange the other day, and it was sweet, but it was in a wet area of the lawn, and it could have been much sweeter, you know.
Right. Okay.
So, Tim, what Larry's saying is it's your fault.
Well, that's why, you know.
But the good news is,
once you
recognize it's your fault, then that puts you back in control for next year, for recovery.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, that'll work. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Great question.
Thanks, Tim.
Got some bad news, Wally.
What's the bad news?
They canceled Victoria's Secret fashion show.
Means nothing to me.
Well, you
don't care.
Okay.
Could care less.
Okay. Well, I've always thought it was interesting. All right.
Yeah.
All right. So on the pruning of trees, a citrus tree, a lady called me the other day, and the citrus trees right now, you know, can I prune them? Can I not prune them? The overhanging branches would be, you know, something you could take care of, but they're best pruned, you know, late in the season, okay?
After you've harvested.
After you harvest, you want to wait until around maybe February, right before it starts to warm up.
It's a good Valentine's Day day.
It's probably going to be, in February, it's going to probably be, you know, be comfortable to work out there. You know, so hold off on the pruning, you know, on citrus trees. Hold off on the fertilizer right now. You could use alfalfa pellets around there. If you've got some compost on your citrus trees, you could use that this time of the year, keeping it away from the trunk, keeping the grass away from the... I saw a couple citrus trees the other day, and they had the grass growing right up to the trunk.
Not good.
Yeah, not good. Keep that grass pulling
away. No mulch.
And then, in the spring, get ready with the fertilizer. But that's all you have to do through them now. If they're going into season with any type of insects, you know, on them, you want to make sure that you go ahead and treat for insects. Get them out of the way because they'll be back next year. If you have like aphids or leaf miners, the things that, you know, could cause a problem with them, go ahead and spray your citrus trees. You know, citrus are, everybody wants one. They're in so many backyards, you know. The citrus trees are everywhere, but good, you know, getting in a good position. You can plant one now. It makes a great Christmas gift. Right? A citrus tree.
Oh, yeah.
And they're very, keeps on giving, you know, and easy to plant. And so you can think about that for your gardener's Christmas time.
Easy to plant once you get done digging the big hole.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. You're digging big holes, not your thing.
No. That's the advantage. And not, you know, when you buy a younger, smaller tree, 3 or 4 feet tall, not only is it significantly less expensive, but you don't have to dig as big a hole.
Okay.
You go buy some 15-foot-tall citrus tree.
15-foot tall citrus tree is going to be super expensive.
That's, you know, as I say. You know, can't do that.
Yeah, right. I know. You hate that. But, you know, I saw a guy. I was at a client's house the other day, and he had actually where he had citrus trees and actually a bunch of seedlings coming up. So, you know, that was kind of interesting.
Really?
Yeah. Every once in a while, I'm walking through the...
So what's the survival rate of that? Because this, if it's a seedling from a citrus tree, it's the seed of the fruit, not the seed of the rootstock.
Yeah, yeah. It can live. I've been going through the, walking through some wild areas, and I've seen citrus trees growing wild in the, where some animal may have ingested the seed and then, pooped it out.
My experience when I've come across them in the wild, it's almost always the sour orange.
Yeah, it is almost
the rootstock that survived.
Right, it's almost always the sour orange. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I've seen them growing wild. Absolutely.
There are people who really like those too. Let's check in with Allie, see if we can help her with her walnut tree. Welcome, Allie.
Hello. How are you doing, sir? Good morning.
Hi.
I got a couple of guava trees in my front yard, and I noticed something like it's attacking it from the root. I don't know what it is, but it's the trees are drying up.
Drying up? They're just dropping their leaves this time of the year, but they're dead. They're dying.
No. They not this time of the year. It happens very so often. The tree is taking a load. Everything is nice. It's flowering. It's bearing, and all of a sudden they start to dry from the bottom. There's nothing attacking it on the top.
Uh huh. Well, walnut trees can get borers, that could do it, or they could have some type of root rot going on there. But I would look at the base of the tree, say 3 mm-hmm. feet up, and look for small holes about the size of a pinhead.
Okay.
And you'll see them all around there in one certain area. And then sometimes you'll see like wood dust. That would be the sign of a borer. And are they younger trees?
Yeah, young trees. I ain't seen nothing like that. Like that's what you're talking about.
But, okay,
I think it's got to be in the root. So what can I use to
Well, they're actually attaching they're attacking the trunks of the lower part of the tree. What has been proven that works good is painting them. Painting them with some latex paint, and they do it a lot frequently on fruit trees. Is they paint the bottom 3 feet,
mm-hmm.
and that does protect them from getting borers, rather than treating them with insecticide after they get it. So painting them is a preventative thing to do, and then they're difficult to treat borers. It's difficult to treat borers.
So you think it's, but I ain't seen nothing on the trunk, though.
Pardon me?
I think it's attacking from the bottom of the root.
You don't see any holes on the trunk?
No. They're not that fat. They're very thin, like a finger.
Well, then, if they're attacking the root, but if the tree wilts down, if it's got root rot, this is what's going to happen. It's going to all of a sudden uniformly wilt down. Okay, then that's root rot. Then you're going to have to use Subdue on that, and do not plant in that area again. Subdue is a very powerful treatment for root rot. I mean, that stuff is pretty doggone good. It's pretty expensive, very expensive. Mm-hmm. So you have to call your lawn care company to put an application on there. But, that will stop it immediately. But do not plant in that spot again.
Oh, well, let's see what it is. I did plant one over there, and the rest came up from the roots.
Yeah, yeah. If you plant in that spot again, it will definitely get diseased again. It's just a matter of time. So Subdue is your best bet. Call your lawn care company, and mm-hmm. they'll put an application of Subdue on there. It's too expensive for you to do.
Okay, all right, man. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Good luck with it. And you could always make a table out of it if it dies. Walnut's a beautiful wood. 720 Herd News 104.5 on a Home and Garden Show. Brief break. Jumping right back on the phones to your calls at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show, 726. It's a beautiful, beautiful morning. Grateful that you're with us. Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden is here standing by. Take your questions on all things in the yard. Meanwhile, Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections, standing by to take any and all calls related to things about your homes and buildings. That number, if you'd love to check in, we'd love to hear from you, is 855-765-1045. Wasn't that easy?
Very good.
Say that again. Thanksgiving is Thursday.
I know.
Isn't that cool?
It's fast. bath.
Really neat.
Yeah, they've already got the Christmas stuff up, you know.
Yeah.
I mean.
Turkey or ham?
Turkey.
Turkey.
Yeah, I like turkey. Yeah. I like the dressing, you know, the dressing out of the turkey. You know, it's tasty.
Yeah.
I prefer that. Yeah.
A couple of years down, I did prime rib.
Prime rib?
Yeah. I love prime rib. Big, old, giant prime rib. The whole unit. I don't know.
The whole unit, what's your term
of the whole unit? It wasn't, you know, individual slivers. It was the whole thing. We got it over at Tillman's. We've gone there a couple of times. Got that whole thing and... Oh, my goodness.
Right.
And then to your point about the horseradish,
there are
a few things on earth, few plants that are as invigorating as fresh ground horseradish.
Oh, my gracious. You make it too hot.
A little bit of that. When I was a really young kid, my father, Wallace J. Conway Jr., and his father, Wallace J. Conway Sr., we would go to this place called the Pensauken Mart up in Camden, New Jersey, basically. Mm-hmm. And they're... It was like a farmer's market and a dumpy little store. It was a big place. But anyway, at the one end of it, they had a place that had pizza by the slice, and it was probably like a quarter back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
They also had soft pretzels. It was 25 cents for a bag of six. And then right at the end there, they had a guy, a really old guy, and everybody looks like an old guy when you're 6 or 8 years old. But this guy must have been 158 years old, and he did fresh ground horseradish. And it had the big horseradish roots there. And when you ordered it, man, you hand grind that stuff. And just walking past this guy's booth, there'd be tears just running down my eyes. And I swear my father and grandfather would walk me by there.
Worse than onions.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't child abuse. It was just a fun way to do, you know, three generations of Wally's. But the other thing they enjoyed doing, I suppose, toughen me up when I was a little kid, walk me by the horseradish. But before that, in the morning, they were both Old Spice users. And they had Old Spice aftershave.
Yes.
And then they put Old Spice on my face. I'd say, come on, Grandpa, put Old Spice on my face. And they said, it's going to burn. I'm like, no, I'm a big boy. Put Old Spice on my face. And they put that Old Spice on their, you know, really small kid's skin. And it would burn. There'd be tears coming out. I wasn't crying. There was just tears coming out of my eyes. And then I'd recover for that.
By the way,
horseradish.
Did you bathe in cologne this morning? I mean, heck.
Does that smell good?
Overpowering.
Well, that's interesting.
Did you read the directions on that bottle?
No, I didn't use any cologne or aftershave. But I'm a frugal guy, and I do travel a bit, and I collect the soaps from the various hotels.
And you collect the woman's soap, and you put that.
Don't know. So I it could be the soap has a nice scent to it.
Okay.
Do you like it?
Not particularly.
I'll use different soap next week.
Okay.
7:30 here at News 104.5 in a Home and Garden Show. Very brief break. Jumping right back then to the phones, and we'll be talking about indoor plants that purify air. That's going to be exciting. Stay with us. Right back. Saturday morning. Grateful that you are with us. I'm Wally Conway from Home Pro Inspections. Larry O'Neill from Larry's Garden is here. If you need Larry, larrysgarden.com. If you need me, go homepro.com. Checking in with Steve, talking about plants that purify. I love that topic. Welcome, Steve.
Well, thank you. I just wanted to mention, about 10, 12 years ago, I read an article that NASA did a study on the best indoor plants for eliminating pollution inside your house.
Yes.
Right.
And the two plants that they chose, the number one plant was a Boston fern.
Yep.
And the second one was a Ficus. Is it Ficus or Ficus? A Ficus tree. And, of course, you know about the Ficus tree. Once you get them set in the house, if you move them, you're going to lose all the leaves, generally.
Yeah, they don't like sensitive to moving, yeah.
No, they don't. But I thought that might be a little pearl for you.
Oh, that's great. We're big fans of the list, and I almost exclusively have plants in my home and office off the list. The spider plant's on there. What is that other?
Spider plant.
Yeah, spider plant was one, too,
Philodendron, the one that's real leafy.
Yeah, philodendron's a good one, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Chinese evergreen is another one.
They tend to be inexpensive, most of them, and great indoor growers.
Yeah,
it's really neat.
Spider plant's a pretty tough plant, you know, if you want to, you know, filter the
Which
air.
One?
Ferns are some of the great things, too, about ferns is they actually can get the heavy metals out of the water. So, I mean, They're used for that, too.
And the spider plant also, they're so easy to take care of. When you get those spiders that come off of them, you just plant them, bit-a-bang, bit-a-boom, you replicate.
And removes 90 up to 95% of the formaldehyde in your
which is important.
Yeah, well, you know, all
furniture and
all the sprays, and house deodorizers people use and stuff. This stuff eats that stuff up.
Yeah.
Well, I don't use any of that stuff in our house.
You know, it's
plus some vinegar.
You know, one of the biggest culprits of off-gassing is paper towels.
Paper towels.
Paper towels, because they use a lot of processing on them.
Yeah. I use cloth napkins when we
cloth napkins. Okay.
Yep.
I like your style, sir.
Yeah, man.
My wife would like your style.
Well, maybe we should meet.
more stuff to wash.
Yeah, crystal, china, sterling silver, and cloth napkins. Whether it's in my home or on our boat, that's the way we roll.
Yeah. Roll.
All right, well,
feels good.
I like the style. But anyway, one other thing. Black Russian mulberry tree. I don't know if you've ever seen one or not.
No,
but they grow fast, and they're a great shade tree. And the fruit's good if you can get to it in time before the birds do it.
Yeah,
but,
I love mulberry.
It's always the birds, you know. I mean, the figs, the mulberries, you know.
Yep.
It's always an issue.
Thanks a bunch, Steve. Yep. Appreciate it.
All right. Good luck, guys.
Once you get the air in your house nice and purified by the plants, then all we have left is the water.
All right.
And I get these interesting questions, you know.
Sure.
I'm so grateful to have access to, and everyone has access when you get right down to it, to Mark Kinder at Affordable Water. But why do they call hard water hard?
Because it's hard to clean it.
Because it's hard to clean with. And you get thinking about why, you know, so much of our thought is water. Is we're cleaning our bodies, we're cleaning our hair, we're cleaning our dishes, we're cleaning our home. We don't want that to be a difficult task. That's the why, one of the whys of soft water. And it's really crazy when you get looking at and having these conversations with the folks at Affordable Water of the why and the how it actually cleans your body better. So the soap, the hard water,
really
does not allow you to get all the way clean, so the soap stays in your pores. So a lot of people have difficulty with their skin, you know, whether it's like acne and other things in your skin, the way it looks, the way it feels, your skin performs better when it can be clean.
You're getting a softer and curlier hair.
I don't think it's going to make my hair any softer
and
curlier.
I'm talking about
the skin on my head is getting softer.
The woman's side.
So it's interesting. There's a real science behind it. And then that reality that it's impossible to have soft water unless there's an ion exchange. There is no ion exchange without salt.
Right.
And the salt is used into the system, not injecting the salt into the water that you're consuming. So
conditioned water. You've got to test it in, test it out.
Test in, test out.
You know, the people may say it's conditioned. If it doesn't, you know, you test it when you first start, and when you're finished, then you test it.
Specifically,
it doesn't say there's no change. It's not conditioned, right?
Exactly correct. So. You can cause it to be exactly what you want it to be. You can trust those folks at Affordable Water, Jack's, Mark Kinder, his staff. More than 30 years, every appropriate license, every appropriate credential. So things are consultive, and you can be safe.
Hey, you want to save the earth, you know, you want to use less plastic bottles, get yourself, a water system for drinking water, and get yourself a steel thermos or a glass bottle, and, you know, do your part for the environment if that's your thing right there.
And it's cheaper.
And it's way cheaper. Bottled water is more than gasoline. You know what I mean?
Let's get out of Fruit Cove, check in with Joseph, and see about a unique idea on fertilizer. Welcome to the Home and Garden Show, Joseph.
Good morning. I came across something that I was hoping that you all might be able to confirm. I've got a Komodo grill, and there was reference to the lump charcoal because it has to do with an accessory that deals with the lump charcoal and being able to get rid of the little pieces and all, and kind of separating them out so they don't clog it up. But fast forward, the thing that was said was about taking the spent charcoal, lump charcoal, and distributing it in your garden, and I had never heard of that.
Yeah, you can.
So that would be
there's some fertilizers that are based upon that, as long as it doesn't get to be too excessive.
Can it change the pH if you're not careful?
It can. Ash does. Ash can. But, I mean, if you got the charcoal chips, you can put it in your garden. Absolutely. But it can. Ash does. Ash can. But, I mean, if you got the charcoal chips, you can put it in your garden. Absolutely. Put it across your lawn.
Oh, that's super, because that's just such a convenient way to get rid of it instead of having to, put it in some kind of container and get all that stuff.
Yeah, and you get some benefit from it. That's a great idea.
Well, you all were very helpful. Thanks for the answer.
Yeah, thanks for sharing.
Remember when you used to have barbecues like Weber barbecues? You used to get to buy the bag of charcoal and lighter fluid and try to catch a place on fire.
I never tried to catch it on fire. I'm not a big fan of the lighter fluid.
Nah.
We used,
I'm talking about 20, 30 years ago, everybody used lighter fluid. I mean,
yeah. There's still people that use lighter fluid.
Yeah.
But a person who's really into barbecue and into smoking.
Puts a little wood in there.
The lighter fluid impacts the smoke, the flavor, the taste.
Well, that makes it taste a little better, doesn't it?
Yeah. Charcoal light. No.
You got to have a little, jet fuel in the water.
And you're talking to a Kansas City Barbecue Society certified barbecue judge, as well as a State Cook-Off Association certified ribeye judge.
Yeah, okay.
Don't want to taste in any... charcoal lighter.
If you're brought up with having barbecue and you're using lighter fluid every day, every summer, you may start thinking that tastes good, just like people eat blubber with maggots in it.
The competitive people who do this at a high level, they're not even using charcoal. They got all secret wood blends.
I got a little apple wood here, a little of that there,
and mesquite.
Okay.
All the different woods. That's like the secret sauce. You hide your wood. You don't let anybody know anything.
I hate to tell you, but that's all that stuff, that grilling and stuff, is a little slightly carcinogenic. Yeah, I tell you.
So eat raw meat.
It's one of the other things. If you read a book on how many things you can kill, you could fill a library full of it.
Well, let me tell you this about that, fella.
Yeah.
I would far rather have a nice smoked brisket than anything you're cooking with that involves lighter fluid.
Well, most of it's burned off, So I wouldn't worry.
I got a brisket coming Tuesday. My buddy Sheldon Buchanan works with me at Client Focus Media, where we do a lot of our video work. Mm-hmm. He has a fifth generation recipe for a particular sauce that he puts on his brisket. And Thanksgiving being Thursday, he's smoking up a whole group of briskets, and we got pretty good deal going. So I'm actually going to have brisket for Thanksgiving.
Oh, brisket!
Yeah.
That takes a little bit of time to prepare that.
It takes a long time. That's why I'm good buddies with Sheldon. He takes care of me on that. I call it a brisketeer.
A brisketeer.
A brisketeer.
Okay. How many hours does it take to cook brisket?
I believe it probably takes him 12 or 14.
12 or 14 hours.
And you've got to prep the grill.
Is it worth it? 12 to 14 hours.
It sure is.
Okay. All right.
But one of the reasons it's worth it is it's his 12 or 14 hours.
Because it's tough meat.
Yeah. See, that's what makes brisket so special. It's very tough.
It's got a lot of marble in it or something?
It's delicious. And the only way to cook it, really, and have it not taste horrible.
Like eating like leather.
Yeah, it's to cook it very low and very slow. And you get all that smoky flavor in it. And it just gets super tender. It gets a smoke ring around the interior or exterior when you cook it in
a crock pot?
You probably could.
Yeah.
You don't get the smoky flavor then.
Yeah, but it cooks, you can cook it all day.
You also can't lather it up with spices and sauce in the crock pot.
So it must be a very inexpensive cut of meat.
Relatively speaking.
Okay.
When I was in Houston for Thanksgiving last year, we went in this local yokel meat market outside of Houston, and they had Wagyu brisket.
Wagyu brisket.
Yeah, Wagyu beef. Very expensive beef.
Oh, yeah, the Wagyu, the Japanese beef.
Kobe is Wagyu that's specifically raised in Japan. So it's the same breed. You can have Wagyu in the U.S. There are herds of Wagyu.
Oh, okay.
There are no Kobe. It's a bit like Champagne. It comes from the Champagne district.
It has that name.
Scotch comes from Scotland. Well, the Kobe are registered herds of Wagyu that are bred and fed in a particular way in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like $300 for a brisket, raw.
$300?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you buy one?
No.
$300. Well, how many pounds was it?
I'm going to guess it was maybe 10 pounds.
And how much is the normal cost of a brisket?
Less than $100, $50, $60.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, every everything depends on, you know, where does you source it.
Is the taste that much different, or, I mean, is it sure. so much, is that much better?
Yeah. You know, in competitive barbecue, you bring your own meat, you kind of do what you want. In competitive right. steak cook-offs at ribeye,
right.
they all come from the same source. So the event planner, when you're having a steak competition, ribeye, brings the ribeye. And what happens, let's say there's 50 people competing. Uh-huh. So they'll have maybe 120 ribeyes. Uh-huh. And it's a blind draw, reverse draw. Uh-huh. So there's 50 people. You take a number, 1 through 50. The first person through the line has first pick out of the ribeyes.
Oh, okay. He gets to pick out.
2, 3, 4. And then you get to number 50. So that guy got 50th pick. He also gets 51st pick.
Uh-huh.
And the number one guy ends up with last pick in the second round.
Okay.
So you have two ribeyes that you've chosen. And you cook them, and then you decide which one you're submitting to the judges.
The taste test.
Correct.
Okay. I got it. Next time correct. I had a steak off, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Hey, well, you know, you could.
It's Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving.
Ribeye.
I'm going to have turkey.
That's traditional.
Turkey is your
best. 7:50 here at News 104.5 on the Home and Garden Show. Very brief break. Jumping right back for the final segment. You're here with us now. We'd love to have you with us here till the end and love to hear from you at 855-765-1045. Stay with us. Right back. Welcome back to the Home and Garden Show. It is 7:55 on this, the final segment of the Home and Garden Show. We had the great debate on what is the ultimate meal for Thanksgiving. I think the ultimate meal is just calm.
Yeah. No debates. You get all the family together. They're going to be a little bit of
turkey. Great
pumpkin
choice.
Pumpkin pie.
My mom made the best pumpkin pie.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, gracious.
It's good. You got to have good, nice crust, though. Crust has got to be important. You get a good crust.
You
have the good whipped cream.
I have my mother passed, 30 some years ago. So it would be fascinating to have a slice of her pumpkin pie mm-hmm. now. Well, it would just be neat. And then to compare it to pies I've had since.
Caramelized top. You know, you got to have a little bit of caramelized on the top.
Cinnamon.
Mark.
See, in my own mind, mm-hmm. her fried chicken, best fried chicken in history. Mm-hmm. Her pumpkin pie. Best pumpkin pie in history.
Right.
But over the years, I'm sure my tastes have migrated.
Right.
I'm also, and I know for sure, I've been exposed to so many more foods and flavors and
right.
things. I would just love to have to see how it tasted to me now. Because here's one of the things I know, you know, I'm a mom from the 50s. Your mom from the 50s, too. You know, I mean, they were born in the 30s, but
right.
you know what I mean? They, lots of canned stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So I know
lots
for
of
sure.
Frozen stuff.
Yes.
Frozen
well, frozen's not so bad. Some of the canned stuff was nasty.
Oh, yeah.
That's why people hate Brussels sprouts.
Ate it out of the can?
They ate it. They tasted horrible out of the can. But anyway.
Well, frozen ones. Yeah, frozen
she stuff. Made the dough from scratch. The pie
yeah.
crust.
That's
that
crust
absolutely
is
from scratch. 100%.
Yeah, I mean, it really adds a lot to it.
But the pumpkin, the filling mm-hmm. came out of a can, and then she mixed it with something. Mostly mm-hmm. love, I would assume.
Oh, okay.
But it best.
Yeah,
best.
Yeah. It's a great dessert.
Yeah.
But you could, next season you can grow your own pumpkin, start from scratch.
No, I can't.
I know you don't have a yard.
No yard.
But you know, it's weird. You think about pumpkins, right? You know, a pumpkin pie, but you got to have your pumpkins planted in, you know, August to get a harvest now. You know, where do I get a pumpkin? You know, but.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be a pumpkin farmer.
Yeah.
You know, you got this one big day and then the rest of the year.
Well, they usually have diversification, you know. You're going to have pumpkin. They're going to have other different cash crops. Guys working in that. But it's a big crop down here in the lower southeast. Yeah, it's a pretty good size crop. Pumpkin pies. Or pumpkins. They got some world records for going.
You ever had a shoe fly pie?
2,300 pounds, yeah.
Shoe fly pie?
No.
It's a Pennsylvania Dutch thing in like Allentown. There's areas, Clifton, Sveldersville with the Amish people.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's molasses-based.
It's molasses, but what is the?
It's super sweet.
And what do they mix as the fruit in there?
I don't know.
Or the vegetables? You ever asked?
No. it's so sweet it attracts flies.
Okay.
And that's why it's called shoe fly pie. If you're curious.
Okay.
7:58 here at News 104.5. Grateful that you've been with us. Grateful
Thank
it's
you.
Thanksgiving. Enjoy your time. And when you're going over to Grandma's to enjoy Thanksgiving dinner, please on the way. Use your turn signal.
Bring some cash.